The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Blog Talk Radio.
Outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show sign.
Well, welcome to a snowy edition of Inside the Huddle. We are talking all Big Ten teams at both destinations for IU for Indiana football. TJ, welcome in. Hopefully the snow does not stick around that long. I do have to drive home after this, but once I get home, it could snow all at once and maybe even get a snow day tomorrow.
Yeah. I don't know how much this is supposed to go on, but I know being from New York, you're used to much more than a light dusting, so I think you'll be okay.
Yeah, after spending 18 months in Buffalo, I think I've seen enough snow. TJ, we are talking all Big Ten teams. We'll be joined by Nick Holmes here in a little bit. There were some surprising people on the list, or surprising people left off the list. Now, you know, we'll start with IU's players. They had a program record 12 players. 12 players listed as either first, second, or honorable mention on all Big Ten teams. Let's start with the defensive people. First, they were announced on Monday. Griffin Oaks won the Back and Anderson Kicker of the Year. He's had a tremendous year. We brought this up time and time again. Other people finally caught on. You know, it's well-deserved. He had a lot of touchbacks. He was great in field goal kicking. A great honor for them. You know, some other IU guys on defense got honorable mention. Darius Latham, let's talk about him for a little bit. I think he had a down year. You know, he only played in 10 games. He was suspended for two of the games. So what did you think about that? We'll start off with TJ and then get to Nick.
I mean, I echo your thoughts on Griffin Oaks. He was tremendous, really, with the exception of one game. I mean, he just very, very consistent. And I kind of judge a kicker of a team that I root for by how comfortable am I when they line up to take a kick. And as the season moved on, I just became really, really comfortable anytime Griffin Oaks got out there onto the field, whether it was kickoffs, where he was, I mean, far and away the best in the Big Ten at getting touchbacks and putting his team in good coverage situations whenever they did have somebody return it on them. And then, you know, when he was kicking as well, I was very comfortable he was going to knock it in and give Indiana points. And he did that pretty much all season. As far as Darius Latham goes, I kind of agree with you. I don't think he had the year that we were hoping for. That being said, I think he did help anchor the interior of a defense that, for the most part, was pretty difficult to run up the middle against. I thought they did a pretty good job of being solid through the middle on run defense. I was a little disappointed he didn't provide more pressure against the passer. It was pretty rare that he was able to break into the backfield and get either tackles for loss or pressures on the quarterback. So that's the area there that I was a little bit, I don't know if disappointed is the right word, but a little bit underwhelmed by his performance this year. I think next year, you know, we're not going to spend much time looking ahead until we actually have to, but I think it's going to be, you know, that the middle of the defensive line, he's going to be the stalwart guy. He's going to be the veteran on there. You know, Green and Rainer are both going to be gone, so it's going to be up to Darius Latham along with some other guys. I mean, they're not going to be bereft of talent there, but he's going to be looked upon as the leader of that interior defensive line. So, you know, the suspensions, they just have to be a thing of the past. He's got to be available for the entire season, you know, health permitting, and he's got to be a force every game. I don't think he was that this season, but I do think he played well enough to warrant a mention on the honorable list. And then Nick Mangieri and Zach Shaw as well get on that honorable mention list as well. I'll let somebody else talk about them.
Yeah, and to add on to Latham, he did have two block kicks against Rutgers, and really, you know, his best game was Wake Forest. You know, Ralph Green will come back next year, I believe.
Yep.
Nick, let's talk a little bit about Nick Mangieri and Zach Shaw. They flip-flop positions in the offseason, and both had, I thought, tremendous seasons. Mangieri really came on. I think he finished with 9 sacks. He played a tremendous game against Purdue in the bucket game. And Zach Shaw as well, you know, came on late in the season and got pressure on the quarterback and you know, had a lot of tackles for a loss as well.
Yeah, you said it. You know, heading into this, well, a year ago, we were, you know, facing the future without Bobby Richardson. And so Coach Wilson said during spring practice, you know, not that Zach Shaw outplayed Nick Mangieri at the Bandit last year, but we believe that by getting the best 22 players on defense, you know, out there as often as possible, that moving Mangieri back to defensive end, like we've talked about a million times, which he played his first 2 years at IU at, that it just made more sense for the team. And it was for the most part, it was a very seamless transition back to defensive end. Obviously, there's a difference between the 3-4 and the 4-3, which is not in the realm of our podcast, but he looked great all year. Like you mentioned, he came up big in the Purdue game, recording 2 sacks. And the same with Shaw. You know, he made some big plays. I can vividly remember him bringing a couple running backs down in the backfield for a loss of 3 or 4. So that was just, you know, both of those guys will definitely be missed next year. It's obviously, we don't want to look too far ahead. Like you said, we still got another game to play. And they're both really deserving players, accolades. And I think more than anything, it's just encouraging, especially in Shaw's case. He was originally committed to Bill Lynch's coaching staff. And even after Lynch was removed and Wilson was brought in, he stuck with it. And I think it's just great to see his development as a player, but now he's being rewarded with a bowl game in his final season at IU. So that's really exciting to see too. And you mentioned Latham. Latham, yeah, I think overall didn't have the season what we were kind of hoping for. You know, he came in with the 4 stars with a couple of other indie area prospects in his class, and obviously those two did not pan out. So I think expectations are so high for Latham that, you know, anything it seems less than a second or third team would be a disappointment. Obviously, he has another year, one of the most physically gifted on the team at 6'5", I think around 305, and he's, you know, he's quite fleet of foot. So it'll be interesting to see, like you mentioned, TJ, the interior of the defensive line should be pretty strong next year with Green and Latham, and then I'd like to see Hoff get back into the mix. But, yeah, that's just about the guys who earn accolades. Definitely well-deserved, and it's just great to see that even though maybe defensively, statistically, this wasn't a great year for the IU team, there were definitely some players who stood out, and they definitely deserve what they got.
Yeah, and, you know, also in that is return specialist Mitchell Page. I know he's your guy, Nick. He's got an honorable mention behind Likely, Peppers, and Janarian Grant, which are three of the more dangerous returners in the country. So he's in that elite group of returners. He had a tremendous season returning punts. There were no turnovers on there. He returned two for touchdowns, and he just did an all-around solid job of returning punts. So I don't want to leave Mitchell out. But let's talk about some – you know, question marks, either guys ranked too high or snubs. I know, TJ, you mentioned in your little snippets you sent me how William Likely was first team All Big Ten defensive back. This is a guy who got torched, you know, almost all year. He was the best player in that secondary, but that secondary was awful. And I believe he was the one guarding Simi Cobbs most of the day when IU beat Maryland. So are there any other snubs or guys who are ranked too high, TJ?
Yeah, I Likely is the one that jumped off the page to me right away. I totally understand it as a return specialist, and he got on there, I think, rightfully as the first-team return specialist. I'm not entirely sure why he was – listed as a first-team defensive back. He didn't have any interceptions, not particularly adept at passes defensed either. He's not a good tackler. You know, overall, as a unit, the Maryland pass defense was poor. I didn't understand that one, so that definitely jumped out. I think if you're looking for a guy to replace him, I think any of the guys that were on the second team should have been up there ahead of him. Nick Van Hoos from Northwestern, Eli Apple, Von Bell from Ohio State, Michael Caputo from Wisconsin. I guess if I was picking out one that I would put on there, it would have been Von Bell from Ohio State. I thought he was a real standout for that defensive secondary. But so that jumped off the page. I was kind of surprised to see both Michigan corners get put on the first team. I thought Jordan Lewis was definitely deserving as far as a cover corner goes. Jabril Peppers, I guess I was just surprised to see both of them make it when Michigan's defense kind of, they didn't fall apart, but they did not have a very good last month of the season. Played one good game out of three, or out of four, really, in the final month. So that was a little bit surprising. I think that Carl Nassib was a very deserving defensive player of the year. I was happy to see him get on there. It won't be a real – just statistically, Joey Bosa did not have the year that many expected him to. Still an incredibly good football player. I think he is going to be really, really good in the NFL. And one thing that you do have to recognize is that he drew a lot of attention from – you know, opposing offensive coaches and opposing offensive lines. You know, they schemed around him and were able to not neutralize him, but were able to kind of block him out of some games. But that does open up things for his teammates if he's got, you know, two or three guys focusing on him to keep him out of the play. So I understood him getting on the first team, even if he wasn't necessarily statistically deserving of it. One guy that I will point out that I think is, he's one of the best defensive players in the conference, obviously, but I think he'll be one of the best defensive players in the country next year. It's Anthony Walker at Northwestern, just a tremendous linebacker. I had a lot of fun watching him play this season, and he's the anchor of a defense that really led Northwestern to a 10-2 record. They're nowhere close to that without him and that defense. So I'm very anxious to see them take on likely an SEC team in a New Year's Day bowl game. And Anthony Walker, I think, is going to be a really, really tremendous player next year. I think he's going to be the preseason defensive player of the year in the conference. I'm looking forward to seeing him continue to develop.
Yeah, and one guy I want to mention as a snub as well. I thought Marcus Oliver deserved at least honorable mention as well.
Yeah,
you know, he had 103 tackles,
He forced, I think he had a hand in 10 turnovers, and he was, I thought he was the heart and soul of Indiana's defense. At least when I was doing my game recaps, it seemed like every week it was him that was our player of the game on defense, on the defensive side of the ball. And I know Indiana has the stigma of a bad defense, and it was a bad secondary that held back a solid front seven. So that was my snub. Nick, do you have a guy who's overrated and a snub, or a snub?
You know, I mean, just to point back to Joey Bosa, you made a really, really good point, DJ, about people game scheming for him. But more importantly, just consider the level of talent that he went up against most weeks in the Big Ten East. I mean, a lot of the guys in the Big Ten East across offensive line were, you know, first or second team or third team. So Conklin and Allen, and you had Spriggs and Feeney. So obviously he had a pretty rough go at it too. But for the most part, I think you guys have covered a lot of the bigger names. Not surprisingly, all three Ohio State linebackers were first and second, maybe one trickled onto the third team. So I think that just says a lot about, you know, obviously if you want a strong program, it definitely starts on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah. We're going to move on to offense, guys, so we could get things going. And we will touch upon bowl projections here in a little bit. Offense, I did think there were a lot of stubs and guys mispositioned. We'll start with Indiana players. I thought Nate Sudfeld was better than the third team quarter, all Big Ten third team. I know C.J. Beathard had a great year, and Iowa had a great year, and Connor Cook is deserving of accolades as well. But Nate Sudfeld led the league's best offense. He was the league's leading passer in yards per game, and I believe efficiency. I believe his final numbers, 25 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. So I think he was deserving of a better fate than third team quarterback there.
Yeah, it's hard to argue. I totally understand the, I guess, hesitancy to place him over C.J. Beathard. But if we're looking strictly at the player and the season that the player had, I think Nate Sudfeld did have a better season than C.J. Beathard. I don't think that can be argued. So it really comes down to how somebody chooses to vote. And I understand if they want to reward C.J. Beathard as the offensive leader of an undefeated team that won the West Division. I understand that. If I'm voting, I look at what Nate Sudfeld accomplished, both on the field and as, like you said, the leader of the best offense, which is the reason Indiana's going to a bowl game. And I think that at the very least, I think he deserved third team, and I would have put him second behind Connor Cook. Tremendous year as well. Again, statistically, not quite Sudfeld, but considering the scheme that the two are in, I think Connor Cook and the records that they end up with, I think Cook deserved that first team. But one thing that really stood out to me when you texted me that Jordan Howard had gotten first team because I was unable to watch the show when it was released. I was surprised that Jordan Howard got first team because, I'm a big believer in that saying, the most important ability is availability. And Jordan Howard, through no fault of his own, he just wasn't available for, a chunk of Indiana's season, and not an insignificant chunk either. So I was surprised he got first team. But then we talked about it in the preseason when we were going through our, opposing running back series, there's really a lot of question marks at running back. There's a lot of talented players, but when you take into account scheme, health, all those things, it's not surprising necessarily that Jordan Howard still got first team despite the injuries. I think Justin Jackson – go ahead.
Yeah, and that's not to belittle his season. He had a great season, but he did miss I think how many games were there? 2.5 or three and a half games?
Purdue, Rutgers, Penn State.
part of Ohio,
Ohio State.
So, you know, three and a half games. And
Penn State.
Yeah, so that's 3.5, you know, he played 9, 3.5, but he had like almost 1,200 yards. And the offense, you know, they ran the ball well the last 2 weeks, even against Maryland with Devine Redding and them. So, you know, that's going to bring me to the offensive line. And this is where, you know, they have two – if people don't know how the all Big Ten teams work, they have a media poll and a coaches poll. And in the media poll – they had Dan Feeney as a first-teamer. In the coaches poll, they had Dan Feeney as a second-teamer, and Jason Spriggs made it as a second-team in both polls. I thought that both of them should have been first-team. I mean, this is a team that went up against Michigan and absolutely destroyed them in the run game. And you saw it. You saw coaches tweeting out videos and vines and all the social media of Dan Feeney running down the field like a freaking madman, just bowling people over like he's a dump truck. And, you know, and Jason Spriggs had been great all year, and you saw him take care of his guys. And I think those guys deserve more recognition than they got. And yeah, I'll get heated about it because, you know, how are you watching these games and not going, hey, Jason Spriggs and Dan Feeney are the real deal?
Yeah, and I just – I mean, that kind of goes with my point of availability. I mean, Conklin and Allen, again, I'm not criticizing them for missing games. I'm just – it's a fact. They missed games. I think that counts for something. So I'm not going to say that it shouldn't count against Jordan Howard and then turn around and say that it should count against, you know, Michigan State guys. I think it should count against any player that misses games, because if you're not on the field helping your team, then, you know, I think that should be a factor in voting. It's not to say it should have played through the injuries, or it's not to say, oh, well, geez, they, you know, got hurt, you know, wussies. I'm not saying that at all, but I do think it should be a factor in the voting. Dan Feeney and Jason Spriggs are available each and every week for Indiana. They ring the bell every week. I thought that there were one or two games where the offensive line struggled a little bit, but by and large, they were tremendous, and those two were the leaders of it. Conklin and Allen, you know, Michigan State was not a good running team for much of this season, and those guys missed some games as well. So I didn't understand how, and particularly Conklin, because he has a tackle, and I know Allen's the center, so that's a little bit different. I think Austin Blythe was the other, I think he was the second team center on both teams for Iowa.
Yes.
So I get that that's the difference there for Jack Allen. But for Conklin, you know, he's a tackle, so he's one of those linemen that's not a center, and I didn't understand what they were doing ahead of that. And I you know, while we're on the offense, I'll, you know, congratulate the Indiana players, Cobbs and Michael Cooper, that got honorable mention. Well-deserved for both of those guys. Cooper really came on at the end of the year. And Simi Cobbs, I think, in the second half of the season, really flashed his potential as we moved forward. He showed up big time, and I was very impressed with him last week when he injured his ankle. Clearly was not 100%, but fought to get back onto the field and made a play for Indiana in the second half of that game when it wouldn't have been blamed for sitting out the rest of that one. I thought that he really stepped up and made quite a big jump forward from his freshman to sophomore year. So congratulations to those two guys.
Yeah, Michael Cooper kind of went under the radar. He had a nice season for IU at tight end, and I think people recognize that, and I'm glad they did, because IU had kind of an identity crisis at tight end when Danny Friend went down, and that's where you see Brandon Knight, who has got some freshman All Big Ten awards as well as an honorable mention, you know, switched over and helped them there. But Michael Cooper down as the season went down the stretch became a real weapon in the passing game. He picked up a couple touchdowns. He did have a weird statistical game at Maryland where he had negative yardage, but he did have a touchdown. So kudos to them. And we'll get into our bowl picks or bowl projections if you don't have anything to add, Nick.
You know, I make a great point about, Cobbs. I think the first article I ever wrote for you, Sammy, was, I was pointing out, these are the wide receivers we got going forward. And I think everyone could see coming out of his freshman year that Cobbs was the most physically, athletically gifted of the bunch. And like you said, over the last half of the season, he really proved what he's capable of. Obviously, there were still some hiccups with some drops at inopportune times. But as long as he keeps cleaning that stuff up, I think we'd all agree that the sky is ultimately the limit for Simi, because he definitely possesses what you would look for at the next level.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at some of these honorable mentions as well. Braxton Miller, he did nothing. He had a great spin move in the first game, but come on.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's in the media poll. I mean, are these, and it's in the coaches poll as well. I get he might have been a presence in the locker room, but guys, are you just voting for him because he's for Ohio State? I mean, come on. But anyway, let's get to bowl projections. I'll get off my soapbox. TJ, you wrote earlier that there's a pecking order for the bowls. I think how it works, if you go to BTN, the Big Ten Championship game, there's a bowl procedure. There are different tiers. It goes, the College Football Playoff, which I think this year the Fiesta or is it the Orange and Sugar Bowls, and then there's the Fiesta Bowl as well, is going to be tied into the New Year's Six. But it goes, Rose Bowl, Orange Bowl, then there's, Outback Bowl in Tampa, Holiday Bowl, Music City Bowl, Pinstripe Bowl, Foster Farms Bowl, Quick Lane Bowl, and the Armed Forces Bowl. There's, if you want to get into details, there are different procedures on picking the team. But it looks to me like I've heard a lot of rumors about the Pinstripe Bowl. Bowls will be announced on December 6th after the championship games weekends. Nick, let's get your bowl projection first.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like I said on Sunday, I have a feeling that it's going to be the Pinstripe Bowl, just, based on procedures, and they can't take Penn State again. Who I see them playing, today I saw a projection that it might be a Pittsburgh. Obviously, it's a great ACC school, doesn't have quite the national recognition of maybe, or at least currently of a Miami, even though Miami's not really been Miami for a while. But it's going to be someone out of the ACC. I'm still hoping for Virginia Tech, but yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be the Pinstripe Bowl.
Yeah, and something else that goes into it as well is, how many Big Ten teams do get into the New Year's Six, and if, let's say Iowa makes the playoff or Michigan State makes the playoff, everybody gets bumped up a bunch. So I'm going to say Pinstripe Bowl as well. I wouldn't rule out the Holiday Bowl or the Foster Farms Bowl, just because I think the Pinstripe Bowl picks before the Foster Farms Bowl. And they do have to get 8 different Big Ten teams in there in 10 years. So, IU has a great alumni base in New York City. I think people would travel to New York for the holidays, and that would be a pretty much a lock pick for the Pinstripe Bowl. The Holiday Bowl would be awesome in San Diego. It'd be nice and warm. So, we'll see how many Big Ten teams get into New Year's Six. TJ, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most likely scenario is definitely the Pinstripe Bowl. In our bowl projection piece that I sent in to you, as a devil's advocate, I knew which way you guys were leaning, and I agree with you, but I put the Foster Farms Bowl against UCLA, which I thought that was a low slot for them, but that's where I've seen them projected in 4 or 5 different projections. I thought that was pretty low slot for the Bruins, but that's what it had, and that would be a pretty tall task for Indiana to take on UCLA, but it would be, it'd be fun. It'd be a game in Santa Clara, so definitely a good stadium and probably some good weather. It would look great on TV as long as UCLA didn't wear their hideous black uniforms, and that'd be fun. But I do, if I were saying, yes, it's going to be this, I would say it's the Pinstripe Bowl, and I would predict that they're going to play Miami, and I'd be pumped about that. I mean, that would be a That'd be a cool game. I don't know how jacked Miami would be for it. They're, you know, they're just waiting to see who they end up hiring as their next head coach. But it's always.
I think they hired Mark Richt.
Oh, they did. They made that official.
Yeah, that was officially this afternoon.
Wow.
They hired Mark Richt. So wow. You know, he could lose big ACC games now.
yeah, he could. He could. But hey, he's an alum of Miami, so that makes a lot of sense for them. So I imagine that their fan base is somewhat excited about that move. So maybe they'll, you know, they'll be ready for that, and the players will be trying to impress their new coach because they'll know he'll be watching. And that'll be, I think, if that is the matchup, it's a good opportunity for Indiana to play a name school that would be more talented than them, but it would not be an overwhelming advantage for Miami. That would be an interesting game. And you're right about the slot in the how it shakes out with the New Year's Day Six Bowls. I think there is a scenario for sure, but say the Big Ten title or the Big Ten title game is competitive, and we'll say Michigan State wins, Michigan State being the top four, I think Iowa would still be in a New Year's Six Bowl as long as they don't get blown out. So we'll say that they get slotted in as an at-large team, like the, I don't depend on who's the higher-ranked team between Ohio State and Iowa that goes to the Rose Bowl. So let's say Ohio State moves up to five, they go to the Rose Bowl. Iowa's at like seven maybe, and they, I think, would get slotted in to like the Fiesta.
I think it's either the Fiesta or the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, so they get slotted into one of those. So if all three of them make it, yeah, you're maybe looking at Indiana jumping up into the Holiday Bowl or into Nashville, the Music City Bowl. You know, there's good memories associated with the program and the Holiday Bowl. That's one that one of the few bowls Indiana's been to before, so that's cool. I think that any of the realistic possibilities are good. Indiana's definitely not going to be slotted in Detroit, so that was the one that we're all kind of like, eh, and I don't think
our condolences to Alex McCarthy for that. I know he was pumped to go to Detroit, but he was the only one.
And that's not going to happen. So
yep.
I think we're out of the woods there, and I think any of the other possibilities that have been talked about would be, I'd be thrilled with any of them. And, now it's the Pinstripe Bowl for our listeners. That is on December 26th. Is that correct?
Yep, December 26th. It's at 3:30. I believe it's on ABC. It's at Yankee Stadium. It would be very cool for me to go home, work in the press box at Yankee Stadium. Maybe we'll get to go to San Diego. Anyway, guys, we are out of time. I do appreciate you guys coming on just talk bowl projections and football. We'll be back sometime next week, maybe. Definitely. We'll talk bowl matchup where IU gets slotted. It should be announced on Sunday, December 6th, and we'll see. Guys, thanks for joining me, and have a great night. Stay safe.
All right. Thanks, guys. Yeah, thank you. And I know that we'll have, I think next week we can talk about all the Big Ten teams and kind of assess where the conference – what we think it's going to look like as it comes out, because that does have somewhat of an impact on recruiting, and hopefully we'll have a couple of commits by next week's show. We'll see. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a good week, guys.
Yep. All right. Thanks for tuning in to the Inside the Huddle, Hoosier Huddles podcast. We are sponsored by D'Angelo's Family Italian Eatery in Bloomington. It's great food, casual atmosphere. So head down there if you haven't been there. I love their chicken parm. Anyway, we'll be back. Thanks for joining us.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match.
Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.